Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? 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 Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia? Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
They did. They gave nuclear power a try, and what a disaster that's been. They burned many things we found, and that gets worse and worse, but we're going to talk about something even more infuriating in many ways. This is the third and final show I'm going to do with Bob Patrakis here, although we will certainly talk again later as events unfold. But our purpose in these three shows has been to do a definitive discussion of stolen elections in the United States. And we, Bob is a full professor of political science at the Columbia State Community College, and has a law degree, a PhD in political science. He served as an election observer in El Salvador in the 1980s, and wrote some of the early pieces on the theft of the 2000 election, along with Greg Palast and Bev Harris. And then in 2004, Bob and I were at the scene of the present at the creation of a whole new era of election theft as George W. Bush, along with Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Michael Connell, J. Kenneth Blackwell, and other numbskulls. What do I call these people? Bad players, I suppose, in our electoral history. Outright stole the 2004 election. So we are going to talk with Bob today. We have been talking about the various mechanisms by which the elections have been stolen, and my purpose in doing these three shows has been to lay down a record here of so much of the research that we have done. Bob and I have written 6 books on election theft in this country, starting with a number of them around the 2004 election, and we have observed elections since then. Of course, Barack Obama won, improbably won, the 2008 and 2012 elections, and many people see that as an indicator that, well, maybe the problem is not as bad as we really think, but the fact of the matter is that there are many, many more elections that have been stolen at a slightly lower level, senatorial elections, U.S. House elections, governorships, state legislatures. The whole electoral system in the United States is beyond corrupt. The keystone of the whole situation, the foundation of the whole situation that allows elections in our country to be stolen, is the reality of electronic voting machines, which are owned and operated by Republican corporations and have been protected by the courts of being not transparent. In other words, the computer programming that's involved, you know, the source coding that's involved with our major machine of conducting our elections, of having people registered to vote on electronic poll books and then coming to the election day and casting ballots on a touchscreen and other electronic machines. This now involves 80%, that's 80%, of all the votes cast and counted in the United States. And this is an unacceptable situation in terms of having any kind of semblance of democracy in this country. These right-wing corporations simply, and there are only a couple of them, simply can do with the computerized vote count whatever the hell they want to do. And so we really have no credible electoral process in this country heading into the 2016 presidential election, and it has had its impact on other elections around the country. In the U.S. Senate, for example, we have shown, especially along with Greg Palast, who's done great work on this, that at least three key senatorial elections, U.S. Senate elections, in the year 2014, were stolen by the Republicans. And so they now have a 53-47 majority in the U.S. Senate, and this is completely due to the manipulation and theft of elections in North Carolina and elsewhere. We also have governorship races, especially the one in Florida. I do not believe for 1 minute that Rick Scott, the current lunatic governor of Florida who was allegedly reelected in 2014, I don't believe for a minute that he legitimately defeated the governor there, Charlie Crist. Charlie Crist had been a Republican governor of Florida, and very popular, and then switched parties, ran as a Democrat in 2014. Rick Scott is a complete maniac. I do not in any way, shape, or form believe that Charlie Crist legitimately lost that election. And then, but, of course, all these Democratic candidates, these politicians from the Democratic Party, meekly walk off into the sunset. Charlie Crist said, not a word about the many outrageous irregularities that accompanied the vote for the governorship in Florida in 2014. Kay Hagan in North Carolina said not a word about the obvious theft of her senatorial race, leaving yet another extremely crazy right-wing senator in the U.S. upper chamber there in Washington, and so on down the line. So Bob Strakers and I are going to discuss this latter aspect of the election theft apparatus. Bob, are you with us yet?
Yes, I am, Harvey.
Oh, good. Okay, Bob, you made it home. Great. Thank you so much for being with us. This is our third and, for the time being, final installment of our three-part series on election theft in America. You and I are going to be undertaking a book as you get done teaching. Basically warning the American public about what to look for in the coming 2016 election. The working title is Why Hillary Can't Win. I do want to say, and we can start with this, that I think that the presence of Donald Trump is actually the most hopeful sign that Hillary Clinton has had. I am sure that Team Clinton is doing everything in their power to make sure of two things. Number one, that Donald Trump does not get the Republican nomination, although it would appear he'd be an easy candidate to beat, but there's no way in hell that the Republicans are going to nominate Donald Trump. And number two, that if and when he does not get the Republican nomination, that Donald Trump will run as an independent third-party candidate. And what would that remind us of, Bob?
Well, of course it would remind us of Ross Perot. Another volatile force in American politics that cost George Herbert Walker Bush the 1992 election.
Right, and it's the only way that Bill Clinton was ever going to win the presidency in 1992 was to have a third-party candidate that would siphon off the incumbent George H.W. Bush's votes. Bush, as you may recall, I'm sure Bob does, in 1991, after the four-day wipeout of Saddam Hussein's hold on the Kuwait oil fields, had a 91% approval rating, for God's sakes. And, you know, he had done something quite amazing, actually. He had lined up, and I'm sure you remember this, Bob, George H.W. Bush, the one with the brains, had lined up God knows how many allies out of Europe, got them to pay into the fund that he then used to drive Saddam Hussein.
To bribe Arab nations?
Yeah.
So remember, $4 billion from Japan and Germany went to the coffers of Assad. Not the same Assad. I think it's his son or grandson. But, yeah, we bought the Syrian Ba'ath Party dictator and, you know, $7 billion of forgiven loans to Egypt for weapons. But quite literally, he bought the Arab League into line to attack Iraq.
I had to say, of course, you know, it's not so much that I despise George H.W. Bush. He's a guy who we really need to be afraid of. I mean, this guy, I don't think in all of American history there is a more efficiently prosecuted war than the one on in Kuwait. I mean, he knew that Saddam Hussein was a sitting duck. He went around and very efficiently lined up all these allies. He collected a ton of money. I mean, one of the few wars where you could do a really clean P&L, right, a profit and loss statement.
Yeah.
And he made money on this war. And so
the real money was made by the military-industrial complex, who sold a ton of weapons after the war. They sold them to Saudi, and they sold them to Egypt, and then they sold them to Israel because the Saudis and the Egyptians had new weapons.
Yeah, it was amazing what he did in 91, and his approval rating was 91%. Nobody on earth thought that George H.W. Bush could be defeated in 1992, but along comes H. Ross Perot. Now, you have to wonder how the Clintons conjured up this guy. I mean, I always thought H. Ross Perot was an extraterrestrial. I mean, he looked like he's about 3 feet tall. He had this funny voice. He had his ears out to, you know, around the corner. I just wonder what planet he really came from. But, you know, he caused Clinton to get into the White House. And I am sure that the Clinton strategy people are really trying to figure out how to get Donald Trump to run as a third-party candidate in 2016. I mean, that's the only way I can see Hillary winning.
Yeah, because the question is, in the case of H. Ross Perot, who is from Texas, he disproportionately pulled votes away in key states from George Herbert Walker Bush. For example, here in Ohio, it was real clear that George Herbert Walker Bush probably would have won. Clinton only got 42% of the vote in Ohio in 1992. Bush got 40%. 18% went to H. Ross Perot. And most of those, had he not been in the race, would have likely gone to Bush rather than Clinton.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. And you know, it, of course, Bush, there was one of the greatest scenes in all of American politics. It was such classic Herbert Walker Bush. In the debates, I'm sure you remember this, they were having these three-way debates, and it was getting pretty raucous. And right in the middle of the debate, George H.W. Bush looked at his watch as if he had somewhere better to be. I mean, it was an astonishing gesture, and really, I think it just really crushed him. But at any rate, so in looking at 2016, we have talked in the previous two shows about how there's no way in hell that Hillary wins if they don't deal with the electronic voting machines. We have Republican governors and secretaries of state in Ohio, Florida, Michigan, Iowa, Arizona. Those states alone, if they're guaranteed for the Republicans, I think pretty much guarantee that Hillary can't win the White House. But if Donald Trump is the third-party candidate, that really throws chaos in there. I'm not exactly sure which votes he would take, but if you posit a Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio presidential ticket alongside John Kasich of Ohio, for example, you know, Trump really throws in a wild card there. And I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, 90% of the votes that a Donald Trump third-party candidacy would take would be taken from the Republicans. He's not going to cut into the Democratic vote.
No, Noah, although he did briefly flirt, you know, a while back with running for president as a Democrat, which is now coming up. You know, clearly he's the standard ambition in search of any position or party that will get him ahead. But yeah, no, the vast majority of that is Republican vote. The people that would vote for Donald Trump are not likely under any circumstance to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Right. And, you know, Trump really, if you dig deeper, I mean, I have seen reportage, and I don't know how accurate it is, but that Trump is actually hugely in debt, personally. And which is, you know, he does pretty
well,
there's
been times when he was pronounced the poorest man on earth during a downturn in the economy back in the 1990s, the early 1990s, one that really hurt George Herbert Walker Bush. I remember IBM nearly went bankrupt, Sears Kellogg was closing. But Trump at one point was considered worth a minus $100 million because of the downturn in the economy.
Right, and I've seen a figure currently of over $250 million that he might be in debt. But, you know, who really knows? But for him, a third-party candidacy would probably be a big moneymaker. I mean, you know, that I think Trump really looks at this as a business venture. You know, I'm
right,
sure
it's branding, getting the name. I mean, this man's got so much ego, and everything is branded Trump. Is that this is just
right.
Another way to get the brand out there.
Right. So I think he has a serious interest in running. I don't think he really, I don't think it's in his interest, his personal interest, to get the Republican nomination. I don't think he's really about that. Because he'd have to be accountable to too many other people if he was the Republican nominee.
And he may have to actually have some actual policies.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, what if right now
but, you know,
he's got his provocative rhetoric, but again, he doesn't go into any detail on anything he would actually do.
Right, but I think it's all about the money. I mean, you know, if he's the Republican nominee, he's going to have to be accountable for the money he handles. But if he's an independent candidate, nobody's going to be able to really penetrate his corporate wall. And I think he can make a ton of money running as an independent. I will bet you that that's what he's thinking about. You know, he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he knows he's not. He probably doesn't really want to be president. You know, I think that would, deep down, I think that's more responsibility than this adolescent Donald Trump can really handle. But, you know, to be an independent candidate and be the spoiler, which I'm, you know, I would bet that he and Hillary have a secret relationship. I mean, I don't think they're sleeping together, but, you know, he's got nothing really against Hillary. It's the Republicans he really doesn't like. And I am sure that there are back-channel people massaging this guy from the Clintonista camp to do this. We can follow this out. We should put out a piece about that. I'm going to speculate right here that Donald Trump is really, really looking for a third-party candidacy, that he'll set up a separate organization, that he'll raise a ton of money, most of which he'll keep, and that he'll just, you know, screw with the Democrat, with the Republicans' heads, and get the satisfaction of putting Hillary in the White House.
Well,
that is my
part
prediction.
Of the problem is that he, in order to keep it, he's going to have to set up some sort of nonprofit or foundation because he can't directly keep it, although we live in an era now where, you know, he said he's going to self-finance, but this is an era of billion-dollar campaigns. So, you know, I think he'll generate some money and he'll use it to some purpose that benefits his ego and his name. Here's the other thing that he has going for him. A lot of times it's prohibited. Some states actually have spoiler laws where if you run in a primary for a party, you can't run as an independent. But he's got the power to hire the lawyers, spend the money, and to hire the pay-for-hire signature people to get on the ballots in a lot of these states. that's always been a problem. You remember John Anderson, who at one point, you know, had 15-20% of the vote in 1980. His problem is all his money as a third-party candidate went to just getting on ballots. He wasn't independently rich. So Trump actually could be a major third-party force in the sense that he could get on virtually all of the state ballots.
I bet Trump also would get a lot of money from overseas that he wouldn't launder. You know, I bet he's got, like, all these shadowy backers in the Middle East and,
right,
and China.
Right. He wouldn't need the Buddhist monks or the, you know, Reverend Moon, the Buddhist monks of Gore fame or Reverend Moon of, you know, hanging out with the Korean CIA. I mean, he's got the oligarchs of Russia. I mean, oligarchs everywhere, India, China, Russia, would all see a kindred soul.
Right, well, you got that crazy guy in India who's a right-winger, but he's also pro-solar. And you've got Putin. Who knows what Putin will do? You know, he could go to Putin and say, I'll make you a deal, although the Clintons could do that, too. You know, you got. I think this is a really fascinating, going to be a really fascinating study in subterranean politics. And I think the Republicans are going to get screwed by Clinton and Trump. That's a prediction. That sounds like one of those conspiracy theories. But as you and I know, Bob, so many of these conspiracy theories turn out to be because there's actual conspiracy. I mean, as you recall, many of us in 1968 speculated that Richard Nixon had sabotaged the peace talks with the Vietnamese to prolong the war in Vietnam so he could become president, and by God, it turned out to be true. We also know the Gulf of Tonkin never happened. The Lusitania was carrying weapons and illegally got us into World War One. The Maine was not sunk by the Spaniards, and the origins of the Mexican War are also pretty shady. So I'm gonna we should write a piece about this. It'll be a lot of fun. And let's move on. I want to talk. I put out a piece today or yesterday, originally at EcoWatch. And it's gone to Counterpunch and Common Dreams and FreePress.org about Ohio Governor John Kasich. So the theme of our show is to talk about lesser elections that have been stolen. Now, we watched John Kasich walk into the governor's mansion in Ohio in 2010. And tell us a bit about this guy, Bob. I mean, you know, he is just such a piece of work. And you know pretty well how he got into the to the governor's mansion. So tell us about that.
Well, the first thing that a listener should recall that the exit polls actually showed Governor Ted Strickland winning re-election. Also, the Attorney General of the state was projected to win as well. So the Kasich victory was unexpected in the sense that the people coming out and saying how they vote were essentially, you know, saying that Strickland had won by 1.5 percentage points, and that kind of reversed itself. And a lot of that could be the propensity not to actually record Democratic votes as people end up voting provisionally, or the votes aren't counted, or the machines freeze up, or the machines actually flip the votes as they did 2004 in Mahoning County in Youngstown, where they admitted 31 of their machines were flipping the votes. So very, very narrow victory, which the exit polls don't support. And again, if this was any other democracy, that would have been heavily recounted as a sign that somebody had tampered with the elections. So you've got that situation. But John's history...
Well, why wasn't there, Bob, why wasn't there a recount in Ohio? I should recall...
Well, because people like Ted Strickland and Richard Cordray really don't have the heart, you know, or the cojones to actually challenge. It's sort of one of these things is that even if the exit polls, the universal gold standard of a stolen election indicates you won, you're supposed to be a gentleman and accept a defeat. And Kasich has a long history of being tied up with the Moonies, which... really is the Korean CIA. I mean, Reverend Moon and his reunification movement really was created out of CIA activity in Japan and Yakuza money. That was all well documented, not only in the Fraser Report in the 1970s by Representative Fraser, 444 pages involving the Korean Gate scandal, but also in the documentary on the Frontlines documentary on the Yakuza and its ties to Reverend Moon. I mean, for God's sakes, he lost, you know, more than $1 billion in a decade, bringing the right-wing Washington Times newspaper. Who's funding that kind of loss? And again, but really it was Kasich who wrote, well, you know, Richard Nixon, as now well established, right, wrote him and wanted to meet with him and went to the White House and met with him. But after that, he was doing a whole lot of that Nixon youth thing. I am freshly scrubbed. I'm not a hippie. And the Moonies were heavily into that. In his first campaign in 1982, where he's the only congressional candidate to beat an incumbent, you know, people talk about a great comeback. But what they don't remember is Representative Szymanski held that seat. And I think you're friends with one of his relatives. But the thing about Szymanski, he had been screwed in the gerrymandering by Vern Rice, the Speaker of the House, is that Szymanski hadn't backed Celeste for governor, but another candidate. So what happened is the district was allowed to be gerrymandered to make it more sympathetic for Republican. And Kasich, you know, who is just this state senator, and prior to that an intern who mainly was known for being late, happens to be in the right place at the right time, and also happens to have the help of these, you know, Moonie cult loyalists hanging around Ohio State at the time, and he ends up the only candidate in 82 in Reagan's off-year election for Congress to beat an incumbent. But a lot of that was not Kasich. A lot of that was Vern Rice, the Speaker of the Ohio House, essentially doing payback in destroying Szymanski's seat.
Right. So we're talking about John Kasich, the current governor of Ohio. We have posted a PRN, my piece about him. Thank you so much, guys, in the air for putting that up. And he is has a reputation now as being the most anti-green governor in America. He has literally single-handedly slaughtered the passenger rail industry in Ohio, the wind industry in Ohio, and the solar industry in Ohio. And Ohio is now looking at voting in a $3 billion bailout for probably the most decrepit nuclear plant in the world, the infamous Davis Bessie reactor near Toledo, along with a 50-year-old coal-burning power plant that they want the ratepayers to pay for. And so far, Governor Kasich has been silent on this, but he's always been in the pocket of the utility company, so we'll see what happens now.
Of course, he also is pro-fracking. Remember, he took the fracking regulation against the away from the Ohio EPA and gave it to the Department of Natural Resources, DNR, who are totally unqualified. Essentially, what the EPA was being punished for was showing up with the radioactivity, you know, the radium equivalents in the water, the two radium-226 and 228. So as a result of alerting people to a health danger due to fracking, Kasich stepped forward and said, you guys can't regulate it anymore. It's going to the people who hand out deer licenses.
Right. And so in 2010, Kasich, according to the exit polls, was the loser. He did get $1 million check from Rupert Murdoch prior to the election.
That went to the Governors Association, specifically the Republican governors, to get Kasich elected. Because he was on Fox, right? You've been on his show.
When First Energy, which owns Davis Bessie, crashed the electric grid of the entire northeastern North America, Canada, and the United States, and put 50 million people in the dark, John had me on his radio show, and I do have a certain affinity for John Kasich. we share something in common with George W. Bush and Roger Federer. We are both fathers of twin daughters, which is a rare and important club. And Kasich was quite cordial to me, actually. He also had me up to his office at one point when he was thinking of running for president to see if he could court the environmental vote. But he has become the most aggressively anti-environmental governor in the United States. He wrote it into the law with no public hearings whatsoever, a restriction on siting distances involving wind turbines, which has completely killed the wind industry in Ohio, which was supposed to become a $2 billion industry with thousands of jobs and much cheaper electric rates. And he also killed a superb green power package that had been put together with bipartisan support under Ted Strickland. And, of course, he infamously killed a $400 million federal grant from the U.S. government that would have restored passenger rail service between Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, and Cleveland. So he has quite a record. That's what the piece is about at PRN.fm and at freepress.org. But he did. He was not a legitimate winner in 2010. And 2014, of course, he swept into office. That always happens. You get these right-wingers in dubious elections, and then the second time around, they crush their opponents, if you could call them that. I don't even know the name of the guy that ran against them. I mean, it was like
it was the guy from Cleveland, was it?
Fitzgerald. Yeah, he,
and,
no
he quit. He quit running and raising money. So a very weak candidate who hadn't been properly vetted, who then picked a ethically challenged lieutenant governor. And really, the whole election hinged on him not having a driver's license. He's a former FBI guy and county executive. But he had been driving around for 10 years with no driver's license.
Well, there you go. There's a good governor for you. Now, in 2014, very importantly, our buddy Greg Palast has reported that three U.S. Senate races were stolen. And, of course, the GOP now has the majority in the U.S. Senate of three seats. One of the key races was in North Carolina. You followed that one a bit, Bob, right?
Yeah.
And now tell us exactly what the Republicans did to steal these three U.S. Senate seats.
Well, what you're doing is when you go in there and look, they were using data, and Greg Palast has done a good job on that. A lot of these states had these data mining operations that essentially came in and purged the voter rolls. So the key thing was to make it very difficult for people to vote. Did you see the former Speaker Wright at the age of 90 was denied his voting card in Texas within the last week? Did you see that story?
Yeah, I think they must have thought he was black.
Well, they have the data. They know if he's black. They know if he's Latina. Are they or Latino, or they know if you're white and how you voted as a Democrat. So a lot of this is you simply make it, you require ID at the poll. You start out by having an assumption that people have to have picture ID, which is really an illegal poll tax. There's a lot of people, including 29-year-old Jim Wright, that don't drive anymore. Although, if he was smart, he simply would have gotten a gun, because you can vote with a gun for it in Texas. Seriously, that was a joke.
That's how they do now. You show up at the polls, they say, oh, you've got a gun, you can vote.
And the old guys pack and let them vote.
Yeah. So what did they do to Kay Hagan and these other two states, as Greg Palast has shown us, to steal these Senate
seats? Well, they essentially purged all of these essentially Latino, black, working class, Democratic voters for having same or similar names or the same date of birth, right? They came, they were duplicate voters. None of them were any real hard matches. It was just really a way to eliminate hardcore ethnic voters and black voters that are likely to vote Democratic. And also by putting in the ID laws, you're getting rid of people that are also hardcore Democratic groups, elderly people who are in assisted living and nursing homes who don't have cars, for example, who tend to vote overwhelmingly Democratic.
And, of course, students who have student IDs but often may lack a driver's license.
Yeah, and not only that, Harvey, a lot of these people in their first year, they're living in the dorm. They're living on campus. They have no need for an automobile, or they're in college, or if they had a car, they left it at home. So you're targeting vulnerable populations. So in these states, even if you have your public college ID with your address on it and your picture, and even though the financial aid office has established you're a U.S. citizen in order to get financial aid, so even though all that data is in the public record, you can't vote. Why? Because your vote tends to vote overwhelmingly Democratic.
It's mind-boggling. We're talking with Bob Strachis, one of the world's leading experts on election protection. Bob was a election observer in El Salvador in the 1980s, PhD in political science, a full professor at Columbia State Community College, and has a law degree, and was my attorney in our suit, the King Lincoln's Bronzeville suit, where they denied me an absentee ballot in Ohio in 2004, and we actually won that. We won that federal lawsuit. The judge required that the 88 counties in Ohio present to the Secretary of State of Ohio, Jennifer Bruner at the time, with all their election data so that we could have a recount on the 2004 election. And wouldn't you know, 56 of the 88 counties in Ohio had gone ahead and destroyed all or part of their election records, and there was never a recount of the 2004 presidential election in Ohio. Where else now are we looking at in terms of governorships, Senate seats, U.S. House of Representatives seats that have been really thefted by the Republicans over the past few years?
Well, let's start with the obvious Kasich clone there, Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Who is saved from recall because a Republican election administrator just happened to find a lot of ballots after the facts. But the numbers up there don't make any sense in terms of the recall vote. And not only that, having intervened with the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, which publishes the Free Press, trying to get information out of those people. And also there was a very strange voting rights group up there, which, was supposed to be on the ground helping voting rights activists get to the bottom of the mysterious Walker vote. And instead, they would never release any data of any of their audits. The only one they released is the one that matched. So all these other ones that apparently didn't match, they never released their audit count of the ballot. It's almost like Karl Rove or the Republicans stuck a pseudo fake voting rights group on the ground to interfere with a real recount. But Walker clearly was recalled.
It's amazing. I mean, here you have this viscerally hated, petty dictator in Wisconsin. And they get it together and they put a recall ballot. They get a recall vote. He steals it. And they don't follow up. I don't get it.
Well, the question is, are the Democrats actually capable of following following up. I mean, the only reason, as we've talked before, that Obama was able to win is he still had the remnants in 2008 and 2012 of a ground game. You know, they still had the ability to, you know, sign up, register new voters, you know, young kids, people of color, to go out and vote. I'm not sure. I mean, Hillary, to a large extent, of course, is a corporatist. She's the rise of the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. And those people don't really do activism. They don't do election integrity movements. They're like John Kerry. You steal for them, and they say, well, you know, I lost that time. Maybe I'll get another chance someday. Maybe I won't. But there's no heart in them to fight. When you're dealing here with the Bush family, there's a Bush in this campaign. Their daddy, you know, is an expert. Their father was an expert on rigging elections throughout the world. You know, George Herbert Walker Bush stole more elections worldwide in one weekend, you know, than probably anyone in the 20th century. You know, he's a former CIA director. You know, they called those things benign operations. They've stuffed ballot box, funneled money illegally, arranged candidates, ran whole campaigns in local elections throughout the world. They've interfered everywhere and justified it by saying it's better than a bloody coup. I mean, they're election stealers. That's what their family does. They steal elections. And they got Karl Rove, for God's sake. Bush's brain. I mean, a man that knows more dirty tricks than virtually any American in history. His life has been dedicated to reading Machiavelli, to reading Mark Hanna, to studying, you know, the great robber baron and the amoral philosopher. He cheats. He understands politics is about power and getting money and turning it into more power. My God, I mean, you've got America's leading election, fast family. You got the Kardashians, sort of equivalent. The Kardashians are to, you know, sort of large buttocks. The Bushes are to stealing ballots.
Yes, so let's look at some of the things that they did in Ohio 2004, because I'm sure we're going to see them again in 2016 as Jeb Bush is the likely Republican nominee. Of course, you wonder if Trump does decide to run as a third-party candidate, whether they'll let him live. We have the experience of Ross Perot having some serious family problems right smack in the middle of the 1992 election. But I think he surprised them and stuck with the vote, stuck with the campaign, right? I was looking at our book, Bob, the book we did together on the 2004 election, the digest, where we laid out
the executive summary, so to speak, yeah.
Yeah, we laid out the executive summary where we laid out more than 100 specific things, many of them small and seemingly insignificant, but clearly they're just trying to see what they can get away with. The number one thing, I've got to read this paragraph aloud. In defiance of longstanding, universally accepted international practice, Ohio election officials denied routine polling station access to certified observers from the United Nations and from independent international election protection teams and American non-governmental organizations. Tell us about that, Bob.
Well, I actually had the privilege of being in Franklin County. I was at the Franklin County Board of Elections to meet. I was an international election observer in El Salvador in 1994. I co-wrote the report on the El Salvador, the first ever free election in that country. And I edited it and delivered it to the United Nations. So I was the representative of the international observers, election observers. So I go down to Franklin County Board of Election on Broad Street there, and in come these distinguished individual jurists, former, from South Africa, who have worked through apartheid, people that have fought for democracy throughout the world. They're in a room and they say, can we, as we do in every country, because of complaints prior to the election, can we come and have access and simply observe to write a report for the United Nations? And Matt Damschroeder, often thought to be a political hack, says, I don't have a problem with that, but let me call the Secretary of State's office. He leaves the room. He calls J. Kenneth Blackwell, rings him up, and comes back in the room and says, right, these are very distinguished fighters for democracy, from all over the world, some of the proudest small-D Democrats on earth. And he says, well, I talked to Secretary of State. He says, if anyone, if you come within 100 feet of the vote, he's going to have you arrested.
So this is Ohio in 2004, and these people are threatened with arrest by the Secretary of State of Ohio in the presidential election in 2004, where the election was decided, and told that they cannot observe the elections. You just got to shake your head in awe of this. In 2004...
Well, it gets worse. Blackwell was the appointee from George Herbert Walker Bush as the human rights ambassador to the UN. So the former human rights ambassador for George Herbert Walker Bush tells the distinguished UN human rights representatives that he'll arrest them
if they dare to observe our democratic process. Number three, the election was administered by an outspoken partisan activist with a clear personal stake in the outcome. That refers to the fact that J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Secretary of State of Ohio in 2004, running the election in 2004, was co-chair of the Ohioans for the re-election of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Astounding. Then,
Democracies, it wouldn't be allowed. You're not allowed to have a partisan advocate counting the election. And not only was he a partisan advocate, he went out and contracted the vote count out to the most far right-wing evangelical right-to-life groups in America, Triad, the Rapp family of Ohio, to maintain the election and do kind of the electronic poll books. And Smart Tech, Jeff Averbeck, a born-again, right-wing, right-to-life Christian minister, all the servers counting the votes are in this server farm run by this right-wing zealot. Michael Connell, who later died, after identifying the subcontractors in a deposition right before Election Day in 2008, said that those came from J. Kenneth Blackwell. He did not get to pick the people maintaining secretly the software or the server farm. J. Kenneth Blackwell said, here, you will hire these right-wing born-again Christians. Of course, Connell was a far right-wing born-again Christian himself.
Well, now, we can expect similar situations in 2016. When we have Republican secretaries of state in Ohio, Florida, Iowa, New Mexico, Arizona.
And let's not forget, Michigan. Most of the Democratic election affiliates are idiots of epic proportion who hire the Rapp family and don't know who in the hell they are. Everyone's hiring the Rapp family, Triad. We should hire them, too. In 2004, they were only in 44 counties. Now they're in well over 60 counties. It's absurd. The Democrats that have these positions are lazy, have no knowledge, but think they know what they're no idea of technology. They're there collecting a paycheck. They're fat, they're happy, and worthless.
And we don't see any indication in the lead-up yet, at least, to 2016, that things are going to be any different. I mean,
they're still really fat, happy, worthless, with no concept of technology.
You would think that the Clinton camp would try and do something about that, but so far we don't see any indication that the Democrats are concerned about the vote count. And
Hillary has actually filed a suit early on in Ohio. She's not dealing with the software and the computer voting, but she is dealing with some of the voter suppression, at least in Ohio.
Right, so
I don't see how you get around the secret software owned by proprietary partisan Republican companies.
Right. So even though they have taken up that, and pretty high profile, actually, they've taken up the voter ID issue, I think, the Clinton camp,
mm-hmm.
and other things leading into the registration of voters, the right of people to vote. There's no indication whatsoever that there is concern being shown about how the votes are being counted electronically. And
that was set up by George Herbert Walker Bush. I mean, that was set up by the former, the patriarch who was with the CIA, and they know all they got to do. If anyone says, "Boy, private companies who are Republican should not be secretly programming the electronic voting machine and the central tabulators," if you say that, all they do is call you a conspiracy theorist. How dare you suggest computer programmers can program results? How dare you suggest the computers can be hacked? Just to even mention that means you're crazy tinfoil conspiracy theorists. They know all they have to do. They've essentially embarrassed these people in the silence by threatening to call them names, right? You're not allowed to call the American political system in question, even though it's done secretly, violates every known principle of transparency, and allows partisan for-profit corporations to secretly program the vote.
Okay, so you and I will be doing that in our upcoming book, Why Hillary Can't Win. Here's some other, when I was writing this with you, I used to have to stand up. I'd type these paragraphs, and then I'd have to stand up and throw things. So here's one of my favorites. Flyers with misleading information about times and places for voting were widely circulated in inner-city precincts around the state. This is Ohio 2004. This is what we call the Vote on Wednesday phenomenon, where suddenly in inner-city neighborhoods, flyers would turn up that were on official-looking stationery, looked like they were from the Board of Elections, saying that because of the heavy turnout, the Republicans will be voting on Tuesday and Democrats will vote on Wednesday. At least had a sense of humor, right?
Yeah, God, I wish I could have grabbed one of those with the citizens. Oh, yeah, no, they, not only that, there were mailings and calls made to people. This is the classic. This is Ken Blackwell classic. What you did is you shut down in a lot of the inner city precincts, and then you moved people around. So I used to vote one block down the street from my house, right, the neighborhood polling place. Then they closed that one down, but there was another one a half a block from my house. But instead of going a half a block, they assigned me to one on Broad Street, which was more than half a mile away from the one that was closer. So he put the wrong information. He kept the incorrect information on his website. So if you wanted to know where to vote and you went to the Secretary of State, he was sending you to the wrong precinct, where he'd also decided if you voted for the wrong precinct, your vote for president wouldn't count. Not your precinct vote wouldn't count, because there are no precinct votes other than occasionally voting a precinct dry, but your vote for president would not count. So he deliberately lost the votes of tens of thousands of people. And then they had people call you up and direct you to the logical poll. They called me up and said, "Oh, you need to just go. It's only a half a block away. Go right down the street." And I knew I'd been assigned more than half a mile away to the Model City building. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were stealing inner city votes. I know, because I live in the inner city.
Well, here's some. Now, let's switch real quickly. We're running out of time here. It's just mind-boggling, and we're going to have to deal with this. And Bob, I want to thank you for being on these three shows. Your astounding knowledge is just tremendous here, and we'll hopefully get this out before the 2016 election, so at least we'll know what we're watching. In Orlando, Florida, widespread police action targeted African-American election organizers, including key members of voter registration teams, and the mayor. So state troopers in Florida in 2004 conducted a sweeping so-called investigation that targeted organizers of a voter registration drive. And Mayor Buddy Dyer was actually suspended from office in the lead-up to the 2004 election. Of course, George W. Bush carried Florida. In Broward County in Florida, had he lost Florida, he would have lost the election, as was the case in Ohio. In Broward County, Florida, some 56,000 absentee ballots were, quote, mistakenly not sent. They were just never sent out. We like that. And then of the 127,000 that were sent out in Broward County, 51,000 were returned of having gone to the wrong address. So they resent them on October 28th, less than a week prior to Election Day, which meant that people had no way to get them back in time. And, of course, if you were, as I was in Ohio 2004, if you were registered as a to get an absentee ballot and it came late or it didn't come and you went down to vote, they wouldn't let you vote, right? Bobby, you still there?
I'm here, Carby.
Yeah, so basically, if you're registered for an absentee ballot, as I was in 2004, and it doesn't come, you can't go to the precinct and vote. They're going to tell you you have an absentee ballot, isn't that right?
Correct. Again, all these absentee ballot applications are set out in sub-absentee ballots, and in some cases, people were forced to vote absentee, and a lot of those absentee, they'll say, well, you signed below the line, or you forgot to check a box. And this happens with provisional ballots, too, that are disproportionately in the inner city. They'll find people, literally because their signature went down below the line, were kept from voting.
Right, and also if you omitted your middle initial, I think Blackwell did this, or you didn't put your birth date on the ballot. They threw that out, too.
Which isn't legally required, but, you know, because you could have put the last four digits of your Social Security card. But, they had people up in Cleveland and certain areas just tossing out hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of votes because of, you know, what you do. It's rationing by inconvenience. Reagan used to do this with Social Security and with welfare. You make the forms really, really complex. You make them put it on the ballot, and then you make them repeat it on the envelope, and then if they left anything off, you just don't count their vote.
We're going to talk with Bob Petraeus. We're almost at the end here. This has been a three-part series on why Hillary can't win, what we're expecting in terms of election theft in the upcoming 2016 election. We'll take a break for a while, Bob, but hopefully we'll get our book finished, and then we'll come back on the air to really go into this in more detail. It's extremely disturbing. You are the great national expert, along with a couple other folks, Greg Pallister, we really respect, John Simon, and Bev Harris and others, to really lay out the realities of the fact that we are not expecting in any way, shape, or form a reasonably fair election in 2016. The Republicans have been the perpetrators, but as Greens, we know both parties have been getting up on it. Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you, Brew in New York. See you next week.
Either show. Way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down.
Thanks.
On the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia.